laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Stucky here. Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 3. This is week 4, part 2. I'm joined, as always, by Colin Wilson, and I'm with Cheetah, Sports Cheetah. Preston, what's going on, guys? How's everything on your end?
Life is good. What about you guys?
I'm just prepping up for the NBA season, Preston. I don't know what you got, but I'm just capping Minnesota Timberwolves over-unders. What do you got?
Yeah, I was going to say Cheetah's on. We have to talk NBA, so go ahead, Cheetah. We'll give you your platform.
Yeah, one of the strangest moves, and I don't know if it's considered square or not, that I like the Celtics over, but it opened 56.5 once the Kyrie trade was officially locked in, and it's down to like 53.5, 54, and I'm pretty sure they won 53 games last year. Horford was injured for a month and a half. Avery Bradley missed half the season. It's not like Kyrie Irving's an actual great defender. He's actually really bad, but he's less bad than Isaiah Thomas. You don't have to hide him as much. I think, obviously, Gordon Hayward's probably the best acquisition overall, two-way player they added. Obviously, Jason Tatum in the draft. The biggest thing no one's talking about is Aaron Baines. And the thing with the Celtics is they had no rim protection. They're putting Horford at center. They had no rebounding. And Baines is 10th last year in defensive real plus-minus. He's the 7th best rebounding percentage in the league. He's like the perfect get that's under the radar, cheap, a guy that also finishes around the rim. I think they're going to be really, really good, and it's still Brad Stevens. They always are ahead when it comes to close games by 3 points or less because they just are coached better late in games that are close. And you saw it a few times in the playoffs where they were able to get good shots late in games. Anyways, I'm shocked it keeps coming down. So they're the one team that obviously a ton of storylines following them all summer, but I'm definitely going to end up being on the Celtics over. And I was last year, which cashed anyways, and you know, I'm just going to do it again. I don't care. It's, you know, until it dies, I guess, you know, in Brad Stevens, we trust.
Well, hopefully it works out better than the BYU National Championship futures. Just giving you shit.
That's still got hope.
Two follow-up questions to that. Any value in a Celtics future? And is there any way that the Eastern Conference Final is not Cavaliers-Celtics?
Yeah, I mean, if LeBron gets injured or if he's sort of injured and then just gives up because he knows he's going to Los Angeles the following year, I mean, the Cavs, I think, are the team that has less of a chance just because there's so much variance in a LeBron injury there. And plus, Isaiah Thomas, I don't think, is actually going to really play till the All-Star break, and they'll have some chemistry continuity issues, I'm sure, once he gets back. So I would say it's not for certain. If everyone's healthy, then that should be it for sure. I don't know what the actual current Boston price is. I think last I saw it dropped to like 5 or 6 to 1, which isn't enough. Definitely not enough. I guess maybe you could look at just betting the Eastern Conference future if you think they're going to win it. I still think LeBron's good enough to beat the Celtics, whether they're home or away, if he's healthy and whatnot. So I'll probably pass on a Boston future. But the season win total, I think, just because you're going to get – I mean, the East got so bad, too. I didn't talk about that before, but I mean, so many star players went from the Eastern Conference, and it was already worse than the West.
Paul George, he's gone.
Jimmy Butler, you have one more that I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but they just aren't star-driven. I mean, the next best team is probably the Raptors still, and they can't really do much. I'm just shocked that this season win total is that low and everyone else got worse. The Celtics got a lot better, and I don't know. We'll see. I could just be like the squarest play of all time, but I think they're a lot better team than they were last year in a year that they were pretty injured. And granted, they have new players and chemistry stuff, but Brad Stevens is just a god. So I will bank on him getting it done. And yeah, hopefully that cashes, but I don't think I'll end up betting any Eastern Conference or NBA futures.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Now that's 3 minutes on the NBA. So that's all we're going to give you. And
thank you.
Just to let everyone know on Sports Action, as we're building out our app channel, we will eventually have an NBA specific podcast. We'll make sure that, you know, Cheetah, you can talk for hours if you want about the NBA there. So let's get another topic that no one wants to hear about out of the way, and we can let Colin, I know, is itching to talk about this. Let's go to the Toilet Bowl, which I know, Colin, you will be at this weekend in Texas A&M, Arkansas. A&M laying 2.5. They've absolutely owned your Hogs. Does that trend continue this weekend?
Let's start off by talking about things that don't matter in the game, which is uniforms. Arkansas is coming out in a brand new uniform that they've never worn before, a silver helmet. I swear to God, it looks like Ohio State's current uniform, but it's supposed to be some sort of ode to Jerry Jones and his Dallas Cowboys team. So I don't know how you get Razorback red, Cardinal red, and turn it into a Dallas Cowboys color, but you're going to see a completely different Hogs team when they take the field. So 11 a.m. Central Time, if you tune in and you see something on your TV, you're not drunk, you haven't had too many Bloody Marys. Arkansas is wearing this ridiculous uniform. Actually, I think their helmets are pretty sweet. But
I just want to say someone could be drunk, but not because of that.
Considering I have a flight into Dallas at 7 a.m., I will be drunk by the time this thing kicks off. The game is 2.5, and here's the rub on the game. These two teams always usually play very well against each other in this series. It's usually been pretty close. There's a couple of years it's come down. It's been a 2-point spread before with a last-second dog covering. I've always thought that the coaching staff the advantage has always been John Chavis, the defensive coordinator for A&M, having an advantage over Dan Enos, the offensive coordinator for Arkansas. He has whipped his ass year in and year out, and that hasn't changed for this year. But what has changed is Arkansas's players are motivated for Brett Bielema. They're feeling the pressure. They're feeling like they need to win. They're not as talented as Texas A&M. They're not as good as Texas A&M. But from what I read from message boards and from all of the beat writers and everything, the coaching staff is already, for Texas A&M, they already know that they're on their way out. They might already be looking for other jobs. The players' demeanor is just, it's not the same as Arkansas. And I don't want to back a team that should have been beaten 56-7, not 28-7. I don't want to back Arkansas that should have been annihilated by TCU. It shouldn't have been that close. But at the same time, this is the motivated team. This is the team that's going to come in and want to win. But I have a hard time laying money on somebody that scored 3 straight zeros in second halves. So maybe it's a live line that I play first quarter, second quarter to get myself a little cushion on the 2.5 up to a 7. But I definitely like Arkansas on this side. I'm willing to wait to let it until it kicks off, or I'm willing to play it live. But I'll take the more motivated team out of the team that mentally might have already checked out for the season.
Yeah, I'll add that, number one, my prediction is that this game's on a neutral field in Dallas. If you get into Dallas and start drinking, there's no way you're sitting in those stands without action. But it sounds like you like an Arkansas first half bet, and then, if they have the lead, you can get out on Bielema at the half or live at some point. So we'll be interested to see what you end up putting in on that game. So now we covered everything that everyone doesn't want to hear about. We covered uniforms, Arkansas football, and the NBA. Well, most people want to hear about the NBA, just not me. So let's get into some college football bets for this weekend. And Cheetah, I'll start with you. We spoke earlier this week, a game that you mentioned to me that you liked was App State catching 4.5 against Wake Forest. You want to comment on this game?
Yeah, I think it's a really strange line, which we can get into. I wanted to preface it, though, with it reminds me of last season in some ways to App State being a really, really popular home dog to Miami. I think the spread was 3, 3.5, and it maybe even got up to 4. But they were coming off that loss at Tennessee, which should have been a win. I think it ended up going to overtime and they lost, and everyone was buying into Appalachian State. The line was really low. Actually kind of reminds me of San Diego State Air Force to a degree, where it was so low that this home dog was so popular that I actually laid it with Miami. I think Miami won 41-10 and Appalachian State was embarrassed at home against, a Power 5 conference team. This year it's similar in that they're, about 4-point underdogs, 4.5. There's some fives out there. They're not playing nearly as good of a team in Wake Forest as Miami is, but they're completely flying under the radar now, which is perfect. They barely handled Texas State, who might be the worst team in college football, one of the bottom five. I think it was the week prior that they had a game against Savannah State, which was technically their home opener, but I don't know if that you can really count the FCS game as a home opener. So this is really the home opener, and then they played Georgia in their actual opener on the road and hung in there. I think they ended up losing by 14. So it's a team that's just kind of flying under the radar because they haven't looked very good, where Wake Forest on the flip side, they beat Boston College 34-10, but actually got outgained during the game, less first downs. They just ran really good with turnovers. They haven't really impressed me. They beat Presbyterian, I guess, high five. I had Appalachian State favorites. I had them 3-point favorites, and it's almost flipped the other way. I'm shocked the lines here. As of yesterday, when I was talking with some other guys about this game, I don't really look at splits between like public percentage of bets on what. I don't want it to affect the way I'm betting a game or handicapping a game.
Same.
But it's come down now. But yesterday, 83% of the bets were on Wake Forest. Like this isn't even a game that like anyone should care about, but that's how popular of a favorite Wake Forest is. I don't get it at all. I think App State wins a game. It might not even be close. I think they're just going to take advantage of the spot. They blew it last year against Miami, and I think they're the better team anyway. So I'm taking the points.
Let me throw in maybe it's either sharp or it's extremely dull. I was expecting the Texas State App State box score last week. App State has 0-3 against the spread this year, as to where Texas State, you know, lost 20-13. App State really had to struggle there at the end to win. I don't think this is something against Yosef. I don't think this is something against Appalachian State. I think, as a side note, Texas State's actually gotten better this year. They're looking better week by week. Would you agree?
Yeah, they covered both their games. I know a sharp group here bet the 13.5 and 14s already that were out there, and I know it's down to like 12.5 now this week, meaning Texas State against UTSA. So I think they are a team that's just improved, and you know, we all kind of underrated coming into the season.
Yeah, I remember that App State Miami game. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was a noon kick in Boone. And I think a lot of times these, you know, home dogs playing, you know, Power Five teams, a noon kick can actually hurt them sometimes. You know, the crowd's not as up. It's a little, you know, a little flat. So this is later in the day, which I think helps App State as well. I think it's a 3:30 Eastern kick. So that's something to keep an eye on. App State plus 4, and the line's all over the place. You can get 5-4. So that I agree. That looks like a dog to buy this weekend. I took some questions on Twitter for this podcast today. And one question came in from Adam in Redondo. At Adam in Redondo, he asked, who is the second best team in the SEC? So I'll ask you both this question and also have you comment on the Miss State at Georgia game. Is the second best team in the SEC playing in this game? If not, who is it? And Colin, we can start with you.
The last time I saw Cheetah face-to-face this summer, we were flying on a Florida airplane. Like, this was the East winter. We're getting better money than Georgia. So as it applies to Cowbell coming to the town, what Georgia has done to opposing quarterbacks, and specifically what the defensive ends did to Brandon Wimbush at Notre Dame in playing contain. I mean, I watched that game back and forth, and the number of times Wimbush was able to get out of the pocket and do his thing was zero. So, you know, Wimbush had 16 recorded carries for 1 yard. Some of those were sacks that pushed it back. And then last week's game was Georgia just dominated. Nick Fitzgerald is the beginning and the end of this Mississippi State team. This is a letdown spot. They're going on the road. It's not a home game at night. Georgia, this Kirby Smart defense looks a lot like the Alabama defenses that were around in previous years. And if they can contain Nick Fitzgerald within the tackles, I think Georgia's running backs just need to have an average day for them to cover this spread, in my opinion.
So, and the second part of that question, do you think that the second best team in the SEC is playing in this game?
Yeah, I was trying to hold reservation until we have the cocktail party. I think my future line has this as a pick. As a matter of fact, look at it right now. I still have this as a pick, so I can't answer who the best is. I'm just glad that I have a better number on Florida than I would on Georgia preseason.
And Cheetah, what are your thoughts on this game and then the second best team in the SEC?
I think technically my rating still gives it to Auburn, and LSU's, I think, right, like a half point under Auburn. So I'd say it's those two. But Georgia would be, you know, behind them, or at least tops in the SEC East now for me, with Florida with all the suspensions and looking like Scarlett Smith, the running back, and Callaway both potentially being charged with like an actual felony and missing the season. We'll see how that actually breaks down. But there was some info this week that came out. And if that's the case, then they're just, you know, missing their two best playmakers on an offense that already struggles a ton. So that's my answer as far as second best. And I think Georgia's now the top team in the East and the favorite. As far as this game goes, I did lay it -4.5 earlier this week. I told people, you know, I recommend it up to 6, so which is still widely available everywhere. You can still get 5, 5.5. The spot's fantastic. And I honestly, the first thing I do when I cap football games every weekend is I adjust my numbers. And then when they're coming out, you know, I see which ones have the biggest discrepancies. And my number for this game is -9. And there's a ton of perception with Mississippi State. I know blew out a really good LSU team by 30. But they're not – I mean, this was when it was 4.5, and I give Georgia 4 points for home field. I mean, that was essentially saying these two teams are equal on a neutral field, you know, disregarding the spot being, you know, such a letdown for Mississippi State, probably their greatest win of all time. I mean, at least in the last 10 years of the program. So I just couldn't believe it. I think it's going to come up, and it has started to now. But I still think it's good to lay anything 5, 5.5, 6. Georgia's a much better defense. Colin mentioned Kirby Smart. He came from Alabama under Nick Saban, was a defensive coordinator. Did awesome against Wimbush, who I think ran for 2,000 yards against Boston College this last week. So the fact that they contained him 1 yard on 16 carries, sacks or not, I mean, that's impressive as hell. Mississippi State, I just don't know how they go in on the road here and are going to be up for this. And the last thing I want to say, I think this is really cool, because when I was watching the App State game, you guys may have been as well, Eason, the starting quarterback for Georgia, got injured, and Fromm came in, who's the backup, who's now the starter, and you know, people weren't really sure what to get, but people I talked to before the year said they wanted Fromm to be the starter anyway, and I was like, well, yeah, whatever. Eason's the highly touted guy with the big NFL arm. He can throw it 60 yards. Well, Fromm immediately, when he entered that game, I thought it was evident he was not only a better decision maker, but he was a lot quicker at making decisions. And it reminded me a lot now of what we're seeing, say, like Trevor Siemian in the NFL, where everyone's like, how is this guy good at playing quarterback in the NFL? Well, he just makes really good decisions, but he makes them really quickly. And if you're doing that, it's, you know, you're going to be efficient offensively. And that's what Fromm reminds me of. And I think Georgia's better off with Fromm at quarterback. He can't throw 60 yards like Eason. Who cares? It's college level football. If you're a better decision maker and you're making decisions that are, you know, positive expectation value, et cetera, you have to have him in there. And I think he's a guy kind of under the radar for Georgia in general. And it's a team that really could make a push here at contending if they win a couple of these big games in the next month.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Now, the one thing that I think people are underestimating is Mississippi State's rush defense as well. Both of these teams have a top 10 rush defenses a year. I mean, you have, looking at the top 10 yards per attempt rushing stats on defense in the NCAA, Utah and Duke are the only teams under 2 yards per attempt. Then you have Kentucky at number 3, Northern Illinois, Auburn, Georgia at 6. 2.3 yards per time. Then Michigan, Clemson, Texas State, and then rounding out the top 10 is Mississippi State at 2.6 yards per attempt. One of the things, this feels to me like a classic SEC under, just on the surface, but it's a game I'm going to be really interested to watch. Do you have any final comments here, Colin?
I couldn't take an over, not with what I've seen the defensive ends hold, contain, what they're going to do against Nick Fitzgerald. There's no way I could take an over on this game.
No, I was saying I like the under with both.
Yeah. I'm agreeing.
Great rush defenses.
Yeah. I'm agreeing with you.
Okay, gotcha. And then another SEC game that I wanted to touch on is another question that came in from Twitter was from Grant. That's at @deriff_g. He said, is Florida on upset alert? I don't really know if it's an upset, but the question I really wanted to ask here is, and this line has been dropping drastically, does Kentucky finally beat Florida in Lexington? They got the night game for the first time in 30 years. Cheetah, I'll start with you.
Can I ask a question before Cheetah starts?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Before Cheetah starts, is this the third year in a row that Florida has been the favorite? The line is completely dropped, whether it's been 17, 14, 10, below a touchdown. It seems like this is the third or fourth year in a row that I'm supposed to believe by line movement that Kentucky, this is the year. Am I wrong about that?
No, last year I remember I ended up having to bet Florida at like -6 because it came down from like 10. And I was just like, all right, whatever, I have to bet Florida. And then they won pretty easily. So I don't know what it is. Every year Kentucky gets blasted in this matchup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been 30 straight years. And, you know, people... it'll be interesting to see how Florida reacts. Okay, did they escape that game and now they relax and they start to play a little better? And, you know, does Franks take some confidence from that throw? Or is this a little of a letdown and then Kentucky's really up? So that game's on the SEC Network on Saturday night. One of the other marquee games that I'll just tease a piece that's coming later in the week on the CW9, which will be released on Friday, as it is each week, TCU at Oak State. I know Colin's going to have a lot on that game. So that takes us into the first official segment that we do each week on the Thursday podcast, and that's Look Ahead or Look Away. So we'll circle we'll touch on the biggest look ahead spots of the weekend And this weekend, they, you know, if you wanted to play the look ahead angle, you'd have to be backing a lot of the worst teams in the country. First game I'll start with, and I'll see if you guys have any thoughts on this, is Tennessee minus 28 at home. I think it's a noon kick against UMass. So they're coming off that Hail Mary loss to Florida. They have Georgia on deck. The problem is you have to back UMass. Either of you guys seeing anything here?
It's exactly the spot that you're talking about. I mean, I don't know what Cheetah's PR is on this. Mine is at about 24.5. So when it opened up at 29, I was happy to donate my $250 to the Bet Online opener to get 29. It's currently hanging at 27.5. UMass is struggling in the box scores with teams like Coastal Carolina, Hawaii, and they're giving games up at the end. So if I had anything to say about this, it's an 11 a.m. Central kick. I have a hard time remembering if Vandy or Knoxville. Knoxville's in the Eastern time zone. I think Vandy's in the Central. So anyways, it's a noon kick for Tennessee players. But the first half for Mass, for UMass, this is going to be a common theme. Maybe they can't win the game, and maybe they can't cover the entire spread, which will probably get blasted up to 29, 30, 30.5. But a first half cover? And maybe some of these games we're about to mention, a first half money line is worth playing, especially the early kicks.
Yeah, my number is 26. So I didn't end up making a play. It would be UMass or nothing at 28, 27.5. The one thing I am going to end up betting, which I haven't yet, so people that are listening should probably bet it sooner or later if you agree, but I'll be on the under 61.5. It's kind of correlated with the angle here that Massachusetts can keep this somewhat close, or that Tennessee's looking ahead or just flat off losing to Florida on a Hail Mary after making that crazy comeback to begin with. So under 61.5 is the play. It opened 57. My number was 56. I was like, okay, pass. Now that it's up to 61.5, it's definitely in range to play under. So that's my bet in this game, and I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to come down, and it's kind of correlated again with Colin's side getting 28-29 with Massachusetts.
Okay, good points from both of you there. Let's go to the ACC next and look at some look-ahead spots. And that's, you know, with Clemson, Va Tech play each other next week. This week, you know, they play two cupcakes. And just when I swore off Clemson, I see this spot. So you have Clemson, you know, after beating Auburn and Louisville, just absolutely crushing them. They have Va Tech on deck. They're laying 34 this week at home to BC. Do they really get up for that game, or does it not even matter and they win by 50 again? And then Va Tech, again, with Clemson on deck, they're laying 28 at home against Old Dominion. Do either of you see any reason to back either Old Dominion or BC here?
So right. I took... Go ahead.
Jeez. We got to edit that out or something. I'll go ahead just because I got to take control, or else we're just going to keep going back and forth. The one bet I have made in, you know, for these two matchups, Old Dominion, I bet it plus 28.5. I think the current number has come down some. I liked it to 27. My number's a buy down to 27. And I know the under got blasted today. And so that's a good sign, I guess, if you're, you know, getting plus four touchdowns. It's very interesting because Virginia Tech looked like they crushed East Carolina, because they did, but they were down 17-7. And then I think they rattled off 57 in a row or something. This is definitely a look ahead for them. And Old Dominion isn't as bad as, you know, that UNC loss. They went down to their third string quarterback during the game, who was 17 years old, and he had to play the end of the second quarter and the whole second half. But it was intentional because their starter in the first quarter got zero first downs. UNC was able to score some. The game got out of hand. It was a 3-touchdown to 4-touchdown game the rest of the way. But this third stringer, who's now – his name's Williams, his last name at least. He's been announced the starter. He's 17, 17-year-old true freshman. He's a dual-threat guy. He was 13 of 16 for 120-something yards and then a couple big runs. I like him, and it's against the Virginia Tech team that's probably, you know, after beating – East Carolina by so many points, a little bit overrated. I know Lowry's out for Old Dominion at running back, which is, I think he's out indefinitely. So that's a big deal. That's why maybe it's also inflated some. But getting four touchdowns or over four touchdowns, I thought was well worth a bet. BC, technically, the number says you're supposed to bet 34.5. I didn't have it in me because I bet against Clemson pretty big with Louisville last week, and they're damn good. I don't know what else to say other than I upped them in my power ratings quite a bit. I will say this, Boston College, they were down one middle of the third quarter inside Notre Dame's 30. There was a 4th-and-1. They could have kicked a field goal, or if they just pick it up, maybe they score a touchdown. They didn't get it, so they had a chance to take the lead there. Instead, Notre Dame went down and went up 8. Boston College gets the ball. They fumble it a couple plays later. Notre Dame takes it back, so it's 15. First play of the next drive, interception. Notre Dame scores. It's 22. And, like, all of a sudden, the game just got crazy out of hand. And then Notre Dame kind of warmed down in that back half of the fourth quarter. I think they ended up scoring one more time. But that was a lot closer game for 2.5 quarters than the final score. So maybe Boston College can keep this under 5 touchdowns.
The way I look at this is, who the hell wants to bet BC in this spot, which makes me want to bet them, but I just don't think I have the guts to bet them. What were you going to say here on this game, Colin?
No, I'm definitely not on BC, because in years past, when I tried to take BC when the other team's got an overlook spot like Clemson, I believe Deshaun Watson went up to Boston and rang them up for, I don't know, maybe 80 points. So I'm not touching them. Old Dominion, I do have a bet. I hit the bet online opener just on principle alone on the number. It is creeping up a little bit, but again, this is an early kick. So this is one of those ones where I might buy out of the full game and play something on the first half points only. I don't think they could beat Virginia Tech money line at all. I want to put a shout out to at least 3 or 4 people that have DM'd me or gotten my mentions about, what do you think about a Virginia Tech national championship? I think if you have extra couch change or Chipotle money or cab fare, Uber money, whatever, throw it on them. There's no reason why the Hokies, this defense, isn't good enough to hold serve with Miami in a couple weeks. And I think Miami's offense is suspect anyways. We're going to find out in a couple days. But there's no reason they can't hold serve, beat Miami, go to the ACC championship, be rested up, and I don't know, maybe come in as 7-8 point dogs to Kelly Bryant in that offense and maybe survive. But I think at 100-1 or something, it's not the worst investment you can make if you're looking for a long shot at this point to make the college football playoff.
Fair enough. And now here's my prediction for myself this week. Saturday morning, that Clemson line is going to get way out of hand, and then I'm going to convince myself to take BC, and then next week on the podcast I'm going to be cursing myself again. So the two last look ahead spots that I wanted to mention were, you know, Indiana, they're laying 24 against Georgia Southern. They're at Penn State on deck, and then one of the more interesting buy low, sell high opportunities with a look ahead is Nevada Wazoo. So, you know, Wazoo host USC next week. You have a Nevada team coming off a loss as a 33-point favorite to Idaho State. Wazoo's laying 28 here. Colin, I'll start with you. Is there any interest in getting involved with either Georgia Southern or Nevada on the look-ahead or, you know, buying low on Nevada angle?
So Nevada, here's the deal, and Cheetah and I talked about this a lot preseason, about why I love UNLV is because of the way they can rush the ball. Idaho State did the same thing to Nevada, and Nevada – it's not like they went up against Cam Newton's little brother. They actually got their ass whooped by Idaho State, not because of one star player. They overall played a really terrible game on both sides of the ball. So when I look at this, I can't back Nevada against Wazoo with a coach that Mike Leach doesn't care about non-conference games. So it's hard for me to back either one or have interest in this. So I'll step out, but I'll just say that my UNLV futures – still, I feel good about them beating the rest of the West and being centered on that SDSU game, where it's just a prayer for at this point.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely staying away from the Nevada game. I think the number's actually spot on anyway. And so, I mean, unless you really think that Washington State's going to just be looking ahead to USC the entire week, Nevada's that bad where it might not even matter anyway. So I'm staying away there. And I'm staying away from Indiana, but I definitely also would say that it's – I mean, I guess the segments look ahead or look away. So I would look away. Indiana's coming off the canceled game against Florida International. So they've essentially had 2 weeks since they played at Virginia. And you got to remember, in that game, they had 0 points. I think maybe they're going into the half or with a couple minutes left in the half, and they took out the quarterback, Legault, who lit up Ohio State to an extent in their first opener, because he couldn't do anything against Bronco Mendenhall's defense. Ramsey went in. He's more of a dual threat guy. Sparked him. He ran for a couple touchdowns. The defense scored once. I think the special team scored once. So that's how they ended up getting to 34 so quickly. But I mean, Legault, he is the starter. He's a really good pocket passer. And I think for him to be the guy and for them to get on track, just because they haven't played now and they were so bad against Virginia with Legault at quarterback, this game's important to them with Penn State on deck. It's not a look ahead. And so I definitely wouldn't be betting against Indiana in this spot.
Fair enough. I'll say that the look ahead spots last week we did really well on, and we played a lot of them. And I think this week it's more of, you know, looking away from these spots. If you wanted to play all five, you would have money on UMass, ODU, BC, Georgia Southern, and Nevada. against Tennessee, Vatek, Clemson, Indiana, and Wazoo. So, yeah, I'm saying I'm agreeing with you, and looking away from a lot of these games is probably the better option. So getting into the second segment that we always do here, and this one will be really short this week. It was pretty in-depth with some more interesting FCS matchups. But the segment FCS or no, there's three FCS FBS games this weekend. You have Western Illinois at Coastal Carolina. I cannot wait for that game. Been waiting all year. Wagner at Western Michigan. I mean, who cares about either of those games? One possibly interesting game is Southern Illinois at Memphis. I'll start with you, Cheetah. Do you see anything in these FCS games when the lines are released, or particularly with SIU Memphis?
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to probably just back SIU just because, you know, Memphis is coming off the big win against UCLA, as we all know, and then they got, you know, conference play starting up after that. So technically, I'll be honest, I don't have an actual number for SIU. I have a few of the FCS teams that I power rated that I knew were taking on Power 5 teams earlier this season that I bet, I think it was three FCS games total. So I won't be betting any of these ones because I don't have any of them actually rated. But Western Illinois, I will say, they're not bad. I think last year was one of their down years. They lost four or five games. They've had seasons, though, where they went like 10-2 and hung in there with, you know, like Illinois or I feel like a Syracuse 1 year. So I would say if there was one game I had to pick, I imagine they're still going to be dogs. Coastal Carolina is not good at football. I'm curious to see what that number opens up at, because I think Western Illinois might end up being the correct side and actually the better team in the end. So if they're getting, you know, something crazy like double digits, I think that might be worthwhile.
So if I was going to jump on one of these, it would definitely be the Southern Illinois angle. And the reason is because they're actually not a really bad FCS team. If I look at some of the power ratings that are out there now, I don't do FCS teams, but I can tell you that Five Dimes goes out there. They take Sagarin ratings from USA Today, and they paste them into their College Football Extra as their lines. I don't think they do anything else than that, because it always matches exactly what the Sagarin ratings are. And if you looked at the Sagarin ratings, Southern Illinois would actually be a 25-point dog to Memphis. But in the power ratings, that makes them better than Rice, San Jose State, ULM, UAB. So they're not complete dog shit. This isn't like, you know, this isn't Delaware type dog shit. This is actually a team that can play some football. Now, the other angle that I've got here is that this is in the Liberty Bowl. It's played at 7 p.m. at night. And if you paid all this money and took your family and tried to sell out the Liberty Bowl last week to get Memphis this crowd-breaking UCLA, and you're not going to come back a second week when the Salukis come to town to play. So I like the 7 p.m. angle for Southern Illinois to make that short drive from Carbondale to cover at least the 25 in this week, where Memphis has a huge game next week. I think it's been rescheduled, and they're playing Cheetah's UCF team next week.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. They got a game against Georgia State canceled, and that was replaced with the postponed Memphis UCF game. So yeah, there is sort of a conference look ahead angle here. Go ahead, Cheetah, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I didn't realize Five Dimes already had them up. Don't listen to me. Western Illinois, 5.5-point favorite, so there's no way they're going to be double digit dogs. That's just never going to come into play.
Fair enough. Okay, so yeah, possibly, is there a line for SIU?
Yeah, I think Colin said 25.5 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, there's nothing here really for me. I mean, I can see the SIU angle, but nothing great in FC yes or no this week. And then, as we always do, we'll close with three and out. So that'll be, you know, three questions. And we're changing the format this week, so we're going to do two questions that I'll have for you guys. And then the third piece is going to be a moneyline dog parlay. So each of us will, you know, put in a piece, and, you know, we'll try and see if we can hit one of these long shots 1 week. So the first thing I'll start with, three and out, is capping 1-0 teams. So one of my favorite stat of this weekend is, you know, so the 1-0 teams you have are going to be in Florida due to weather. So you have UCF, you know, is catching 3.5 at Maryland. You have Miami, who's laying, what, I think 11 or 12 against Toledo. Florida State laying 13 against NC State. By the time UCF kicks, for example, they're going to be 0-1, and UMass will be 0-5, which I thought was pretty funny. So, you know, UCF, for example, they haven't played since August. I mean, their last game was on August 31st. They've had back-to-back weeks canceled. Do either of you guys see an angle, or is it even too difficult to look at these teams, either with Miami, Florida State, UCF? Colin, I'll start with you if you want to take one or, you know, two of these games.
Though I'll take the Miami Toledo, and this is going to be in my CW9 column coming out later this week. One of the things Toledo has been this year so far in their games is completely efficient on the offensive side of the ball. They're 11th in yards per play. They're 32nd in time of possession. They're 13th in first downs. What this means is they have very long sustaining drives. They have double-digit drives. They can eat clock. They can go 11 yards, move the chains, 11 yards, move the chains. It's not – they can be explosive, but they're not huge explosive. They know how to move the chains, eat clock, and keep other teams' offenses from being on the field. I went through the one game that Miami played against Bethune-Cookman, and something that stuck out to me, it wasn't the score, it wasn't anything else, but Bethune-Cookman in that game had four drives of at least 10 plays. That shocks me. It shocks me that how great this Miami defense is supposed to be. They allowed double-digit drives on four separate times against Bethune-Cookman. I'm looking at Toledo, and I think that they can move the chains, eat clock, and I love that. You know, the Miami defense, everybody's supposed to love with, but I'm focusing on the fact that I think that Toledo offense is going to come in guns blazing.
So question for you there is, do you think that the long layoff helps or hurts overall, or is it really team-specific?
I think it hurts the offense. The offense was a question in the first place. Their only thing they've seen is they could get a practice squad from FIU and they'd go to Hollywood and play. You know, they have had no competition whatsoever, not a real game with Bethune-Cookman. I think it definitely hurts the offense, which was the biggest question mark coming into the season for the Miami Hurricanes.
That's fair enough. Cheetah, do you have any comments on either of those three games involving Miami, Florida State, or UCF?
Yeah, I can talk about each of them a little bit. The main one, though, and to call in sentiments here, I played under 60 on Monday night in this Toledo-Miami game. For the reasons he mentioned, Toledo should be able to at least run some clock and move the ball to an extent on this Miami defense, no matter how good it is. You know, and they also could lead to points. I understand that, too. But one, the number was too high at 60. I had it lower at 55.5. And then you actually, when you're talking about defensively, when we're talking about layoffs and it's hurting the offense, that's going to play to an under two. Miami's defense now has had a couple of weeks to just look at Toledo if they wanted. And on the flip side, their offense could be rusty. And to go a step further, the actual like schedule for Miami, this could be really interesting. And that's why I don't think you can really cap a lot of these games, because we just have no historical, you know, data in any situations like these before. But they had not only, I think their last practice outside of this week was, they didn't practice at all last week, and it was the week prior, their last practice was Tuesday, and at that point there was no school at the university, and the coach told all the players to go home to their families. So from 2 weeks ago Tuesday through all of last week, then they started practicing again this week on Monday. They didn't even practice. They may have been looking at film and stuff, you know, on their iPads they all have now. I'm sure they were studying up some, but they weren't going through motions. They had that one game just so long ago now. I expect the offense to be rusty. I think the angle would be on these teams, whether it's UCF, Miami, or Florida State, if you wanted to play it, is to bet the other team first half, just if you think the rust angle is going to be good. And then when you kind of just bring everything together with this Toledo-Miami game, it screams under to me, and the number was too high because Toledo just threw 185 on Tulsa. So that was just a pretty big – I exploited it. I had to take advantage, and you know, under I think still good at 57.5, I think is the current number, so I don't have it up on the screen. But anyway, that's kind of my thinking. I just don't know if, you know, in 10 years, if we had hurricane issues every year for 10 years, then maybe we'd have some data that would back up an angle. But it's just tough to really know ultimately.
Yeah, that's the angle that I was going to mention as well with the rust. You also possibly, if they're not practicing, not having game action, you might have cramps or conditioning issues. Florida State, NC State. NC State has historically given Florida State fits. Is NC State ever going to cover, Colin?
I have stopped betting them since the South Carolina game. Win the box score, double the yards, and still don't cover or, you know, do anything against South Carolina. One quick back thing on the Toledo-Miami thing with cramps, it's going to be 90 degrees. So it's still really hot down there in Miami. So I just wanted to throw that in there. And don't forget to check your weather. Both of these guys, Miami and Toledo, I'm sorry about this, but they have very experienced kickers, three-year length kickers, all MAC kickers, all ACC kickers. There's crosswinds of over 15 plus miles an hour in the stadium. I think special teams could come into plays here, but anyways, that was completely off track.
Well, we had to get our kicker reference in. So that was first down. Now getting to second down, which is upset alert. So there's four top 10 teams playing on the road in conference this weekend. That would be Penn State, who's laying, I believe, around 12.5 at Iowa. You have Washington minus 11 at Colorado, Bama minus 18.5 at Vanderbilt, and Oklahoma laying 27.5, 28 at Baylor. Any value in either of these dogs or any of these dogs, and do you see the potential for an outright upset? I'll start with you, Cheetah, here.
Yeah, I think the one that's the best of the four for me, not just because it's a shorter number, but I mean, even against the spread, I had bet Iowa. I did bet them at the win openers on Sunday here in Las Vegas. I think it was 12.5, which is what the current number is. My number is 9.5, so I thought it would come down. It hasn't yet. We'll see. I'm going to hold it if it doesn't. I mean, I think it's a good bet. I think they're the right side. I think it was pretty evident they were not only flat off that Iowa State come from behind miracle, but they didn't care about North Texas at all. And they were looking ahead to this Big Ten opener. Penn State really hasn't impressed me much. They clocked Georgia State in, was it Akron, I think, in week one. And then when they played a semi-decent team in Pitt, they actually out first down. They were just plus two in turnovers, and Pitt found ways to, you know, stall a bunch of drives too, kind of in the gray area where they couldn't kick and they had to go for it on fourth down. And on top of it, this is a Pitt defense that gave up 49 and 500 yards to Oklahoma State at home in the first half, and Penn State couldn't really do anything offensively against Pitt. So Iowa's obviously a team that's won a bunch of games like this before. They play a slower game where it's going to be lower scoring, and they're going to try to control it and keep it within a score or 10 points anyways. So I think that's the best one of those four. I think Baylor number is absurdly high if you're into betting teams that really suck. Vanderbilt's never beating Alabama. It's technically short, but my raw power rating doesn't account for the total, and this total is really low, so you kind of have to compress. My 22 would probably be more like a 19.5 or 20. So I think that's about right. I think the one that I'd have to pick out of these four is Iowa to cover, and also for a little money line shot.
Yeah, and I would add that if you're going to bet Baylor, just be ready for Lincoln Riley trying to cover at the end of the game. Sorry, I'm still bitter.
Tulane?
Yeah. And one thing to mention on the Iowa game, however, is, you know, they're a heavy rush offense, and they have one of the best running back tandems in the country. They lost James Butler last week. He's out 3 to 4 weeks. They still have Wadley, who is probable, but he was injured last game as well. So if his status changes, you know, the outlook of that game if they lose their top two backs for that Iowa offense. But as of right now, he's upgraded to probable, so it looks like Wadley will go. But something to keep an eye on in that game. Colin, what do you see in any of these four games?
I like Washington to cover the number. I don't like Colorado specifically to win. The same thing goes for Vanderbilt. Alabama, I think, is going to get beat. I don't like what's going on with defensive end. I don't like the injuries they're taking at linebacker. I thought Colorado State was able to Nick Stevens was able to expose a little bit of that, but not enough. They were good enough to cover the first half, kind of give them a little bit of pressure to maybe have a money line first half, but then to cover the number in general. I don't see an offense on Alabama's schedule that's going to expose them, and it's definitely not going to be Vanderbilt. I would like this game more for Vanderbilt if it was one of those noon 11 a.m. kicks. The old Jefferson Pilot there for all you old SEC fans, but it's not. It's going to get CBS action 2:30 later in the day. And, you know, take into a fact that Alabama's been hearing about how good Clemson is, right? So maybe Vanderbilt covers this number in the first half, but if Alabama's any kinds of pissed off, I wouldn't want to be anywhere on the side of the number that favors the Commodores here. Iowa, on the other hand, I'm willing to admit that Wyoming sucks. I've seen them enough now that I don't have enough. The ticket that I'm holding on Wyoming to win the Mountain West, I just want to burn it. But Iowa, on the other hand, they haven't done anything to make me believe in them. But she is absolutely right. Pitt dominated Penn State in the box score. So what's going to happen if Iowa can control the trenches, which keep an eye early. I love to bet live. I know Cheetah bets live. I know Stuck bets live. And we don't give it enough. We don't give it enough exposure about how valuable it is as a tool. If you see that Iowa on defense and in the trench is able to contain Barkley and they're able to control the line of scrimmage, get on this number before it dips below double digits. You're going to have your chances. Don't question it. If they're able to control the trenches, get in on the Iowa number immediately.
All right, so gun to your head, I'll start with you, Chita. Just give me the record. So what happens at the Penn State, Washington, Bama, OU? Did I end up 4-0 after this weekend's over?
3-1.
Colin?
Yeah, 3-1.
Okay. All right, so now we're going to close the podcast with our third down before we head out of here. And it's a new segment that we're doing here, and that's the Moneyline Underdog Parlay. So we're each going to give one, and we'll see how we can do this year. I'll start. I'm going to be a absolute pussy and just give Air Force at +150. That'll be the first leg. Colin, what do you think here for your Moneyline dog in the parlay this week?
We talked about something earlier. I'm going to completely change it on the fly, and I'm going to go with Texas State as a double-digit dog at home in San Marcos against Meep UTSA. I don't think UTSA is scoring at an absurd rate, and they're doing great, but I think they have no interest in this game, and I think Texas State is getting better week by week, and I'm going to roll the dice with the Bobs here.
And Cheetah?
Yeah, my pick is Arizona State. It's +525. I know when I looked earlier and sent it over to you, but the number's really, really high. It's obviously, if I'm betting a money line, I probably played them against the spread as well. It's down to 14.5. I had this at 8.5. I also thought the number against Texas Tech was pretty crazy when it was 7.5, and I took a piece of that. So I'm a little bit higher than market on the Sun Devils. But this is the thing, is it's not really an anti-Oregon play, because I mean, Colin knows for sure, and we maybe even talked about it on this show before the year. I mean, I was on all the Oregon overs and games of the year and stuff, so I'm not anti-Oregon. But they still have only scored 7 points in 2 second halves against Wyoming and Nebraska. Wyoming, not only did their offense just look putrid, and they might just be bad, but I mean, Allen did get injured. He hurt his finger. He had to go out. The backup came in. Allen went back in. He hurt his ankle. He went back out. Backup was bad. I mean, it was just back and forth. 42 points in both first halves for Oregon, and then after that, they got 7 late against Wyoming, but they couldn't score against Nebraska in the second half at home. They gave up 35 against a Nebraska team that followed it up with a home loss to Northern Illinois. I'm not sure that anything Oregon's done is very impressive. And at the very least, giving up 35 to Nebraska, a team that couldn't score, I think it was more than 13 or 14 points at home to Northern Illinois. They gave up 21 to Southern Utah. The Wyoming one, there was the back and forth with Allen and the quarterbacks. Arizona State, if they can do anything, it's they can score with anyone. They were down 17 against Texas Tech, came all the way back. I think it was tied 45 late, and they had a chance to win the game. Arizona State's going to score with Oregon. They're getting, at home, 2.5 touchdowns, or now it's down to 14.5. I mean, I think it's a great bet, and at 5-1, I mean, if this turns into a shootout, it's whoever has the ball last type thing. Give me 5-1 on Arizona State having the ball last and putting it in the end zone. So I really like that bet, actually, against the spread and then plus the money line.
Oregon is just Arkansas in green colors. That's all it is. Second half, no scoring whatsoever.
Yep. So there you have it. The inaugural Degen and Juice underdog money line parlay of Texas State, Air Force, and Arizona State pays out about 75-1-ish. So we will see if we can hit one of these throughout the year. Thanks a lot for coming on, Cheetah. I know that we'll be hearing more from you in the future, especially in regards to NBA. And I wish you luck this upcoming weekend. And look out for the CW9 piece on Friday. And I guess I should thank Colin for coming on. The CW9 piece on Friday, 6-pack on Saturday. All later. Good luck this weekend. Cheers.